What's going on, everybody? It's be your boy
Jay Anonymous,
DJ Anonymous, with another episode of Sports Biz Music, the podcast. And I have a very special guest on the show today. I have Zach Peerless. How you doing?
Hey, I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Now, did I say your name right? The last name.
Yeah, you got it.
So, before we get into the podcast and the questions that I have for you, can you introduce yourself to the listeners?
Sure. My name is Zach Peerless, like you said. I write the morning newsletter for CBS Sports. Been doing that for about 6 months now. Before that, I worked at ESPN, and I've also worked for the Broncos. I've covered some college basketball. Been pretty much everywhere, bounced around a few places.
Okay. So what made you want to, I guess, I don't know if this is considered a beat writer or, but like what made you want to get into, like, I guess, writing, especially in the sports industry?
For sure. I grew up playing sports, loving sports, watching sports, played sports in high school. It's always been a big passion of mine. And, you know, by the time I hit high school, I knew that I wasn't going to be making any money playing sports. So I wanted to stay around the game as much as I could. I enjoyed writing. I thought that kind of I had a passion for that. And I obviously had a passion for sports. So in high school, I started writing for my local newspaper. I'm from a small town in Virginia, so started writing there. Yeah, exactly. So started writing when I was, between my junior and senior year of high school for the local paper, just like as an intern, and it went from there.
So what was like your first, like, assignment? And were you nervous at the time when you did your first assignment?
Yeah, so that summer between my junior and senior year, I'm from Waynesboro, Virginia, which is like if the middle of nowhere had a middle of nowhere.
It's country.
Yeah, it is. It's down near Charlottesville. So UVA growing up, I was a huge fan, but Waynesboro has a summer baseball league, the Waynesboro Generals, and that was kind of my first beat. It was a lot of college players from all around the country come and play summer ball, and I got to build really good relationships with the players and the coaches, and I kind of took over that beat and wanted to make it my own. So I was at, you know, all of the games and trying to build good relationships and just provide a level of coverage that people could appreciate in the community.
So like what's like the day-to-day basis as far as, like, you know, being a writer, you know, in sports, you know, whether it was working with the Broncos or even currently right now with CBS, like how is it, like, what, like, what's the I don't want to say pro and cons, but like what's the overall challenges and the daily, like, stuff, because I know it's crazy.
Sure. Yeah, it is crazy. But it's fun. It's really a lot of fun. I'd say, like, my day-to-day right now with CBS, I work nights, and so we're trying to wrap up everything that goes on in sports the day, that previous night, and then kind of inform the readers, you know, when they wake up and they're having their morning coffee or whatever, they're checking their emails and they get my newsletter. And it's kind of supposed to be a wrap up of what happened the night before. And also linking to a lot of the stories on CBSSports.com. So really just trying to make the readers more educated on what's going on and maybe provide them some laughs, some humor, and some insight into what's happening. You know, I try to approach my job as informing the readers, but also presenting it in a way that makes them interested, makes them want to read. You know, you don't want it to be too dry and bore readers with a bunch of numbers, but you also want them to be informed and come away feeling like they learned something, they got smarter. So it's a balance for sure. But just trying to be smart about things, but also have some personality. Mm-hmm. Like while I'm watching a game, I'm trying to take notes of what happened. Like, you know, we're recording this right after last night, tough loss for the 76ers. and James Harden just disappeared. And that was obviously something that I wanted to make note of in the newsletter for sure. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to make sure that people kind of understood why it was so disappointing. You know, they had really gone all in on Harden and Embiid and making those two work. So mm-hmm. I wanted to, you know, provide the numbers that make it so surprising and like, wow, James Harden really kind of disappeared, but also, you know, provide the information of like, now what's next, and just try to keep people informed and make it a well-rounded product.
I'm glad you brought that up because I'm a Heat fan, so I was very happy. But
yeah,
absolutely. But as like I guess, you know, doing podcasting, I guess that's the media perspective.
Mm-hmm.
I always knew that whole situation with the 76ers, you know, with Ben Simmons and James Harden. First of all, my opinion, I wish that they would have traded for Dame instead of James Harden, because that could have been a better combo. Because me and my homeboys, we talk about it all the time, like in our group chats. You know how the group chat is. Talk about everything.
Sure, of course.
And for me as a Heat fan, if they would have got Dame, I feel like that series would have went game seven. You know, even with Embiid hurt the first two games, I feel like with just having Dame alone, they could have stole one of the games, you know, in Miami. So, but yeah, I'm one of them people though, like, you know, James Harden, he really disappeared. Like, I just looked at the stats this morning, I'm like, he only attempted two shots in the whole, like, second half.
Wild.
That's crazy. In a playoff, like, situation, like, you about to be eliminated. Like, that's crazy, man.
Right. No, I agree. I mean, and obviously, you know, there was a lot made with James Harden because of his past with Daryl Morey, and that's Morey's guy. So, it's just, you know, I think sports, one of the things that I like about it so much is that stuff changes so quickly. Like, if you told me 2 years ago or 3 years ago that James Harden would go to Brooklyn and then Philly, and then he still wouldn't get out of even the second round, and he would disappear in a second half while Joel Embiid's playing with a, you know, a broken face. You know, it just changes so quickly, and that's what makes it so fun, is that every single day of the year, there's never a quiet day in sports. And it's just, you know, you see these guys evolve. You know, 2-3 years ago, James Harden's one of the most dominant scoring guards that we've ever seen. And now we see him disappearing down the stretch of a do or die game. So just how quickly things change, and you can't take, you know, we're all fans, and you can't take the, you know, the good times for granted, because you don't realize change. And I, you know, I try to, when I write the newsletter, I try to take, you know, partly the position of a writer, but also realizing that the people reading it are fans. So try to remember, like, you know, you're a Heat fan. These Heat teams are good. Like, you can't, you know, you can't take that for granted. That's a really good team. I really have enjoyed watching Jimmy Butler the last few years. Like, those are some good teams, and it's important to appreciate them when they're good.
Yes, because, you know, one thing about, you know, the Miami Heat, you know, I'm from Miami, so I root for the Heat, the Dolphins, everything Miami. And, you know, it's very hard down here, especially football season, you know, with the Dolphins. I don't want to talk about that. But anyway, but one thing about the Miami Heat is that, you know, they're the most consistent, you know, organization down here. And that, you know, when Eric Spoelstra was, you know, when he was in his press conference last night, and he was saying that, you know, in the 27 years of, I guess since I don't know if since Pat Riley or since like the whole since the Miami Heat been around. I think I ain't trying to mix no words, but he said we've been to the conference finals 9 times, and you know that's crazy. That's hard. You know that's hard to do. Of course, people are gonna say, well, you know, LeBron went to 10 straight. That's cool, but like I'm talking about, as like organization wise, that's still hard, especially with the different maneuvering, the different trades, the different draft. You know, we had to rebuild after LeBron left. So, like, just seeing this team, it kind of reminds me a little bit of the 06 team where, you know, of course you had Shaq, but you had an up-and-coming star like Dwayne Wade with veterans around. This team is more the opposite. You know, you got Jimmy Butler, you have PJ Tucker, you have Kyle Lowry, and then like you have the younger, you know, talent around. So it's like, to me, it's like this is probably like the deepest team we ever had. So
yeah, you know, no, I agree with that.
So I can't wait. So hopefully we win the championship, but it's gonna be a crazy off season too, because I'm hearing Spider want to come down here too. But
that'd be wild.
That'd be crazy. But in your industry, as a journalist, I know it's very competitive. Do you? I'm just speaking to you. You know, as Zach. You know, do you like to compete with people? Is it a competition to you, or you just go by your own, you know, your own way, like you pick the stories, or you pick the stories, but also you have your own, opinion about something. Like basically, I'm trying to ask you, do you compete with others, or you just go by your own, I guess, flow?
Sure. Yeah. No, I mean, that's a good question. It is a competitive industry for sure. Mm-hmm. And I think I went to Northwestern University, and that was like when I first learned how competitive it was, because there were many different outlets and they're all covering the same team. Mm-hmm. So there's always naturally some competition. I think, you know, you want to write the best, you know, feature stories and the best, you know, you want to get the best interviews and ask the best questions. But to be honest, I think the competition is really against myself. I want to make sure that I'm doing my best work, and I'm growing as a journalist. And I'm trying to, you know, perfect my craft. I think that in any profession, you're really trying to improve and perfect what you're doing. And so my biggest competition is always myself. Right. I'm always trying to find ways, you know, it's interesting because in journalism, you have to fill so many roles. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got to be the person who understands the sport well enough to explain it to people, but you also have to be able to write it well enough so that people can understand your story. And you have to be able to, you know, fit in the quotes where they work and fit in your own observations. So, it's always a balancing act. You know, there are some times where you think you have a perfect question ready to go, and you get down into the post game press conference and maybe you don't get the answer that you wanted, and you're like, dang, now I can't really frame my story around this idea. Mm-hmm. So, to answer your original question, I'd say that there is some competition. You always want to, you know, provide the best level of coverage that you can, compared to your peers. But really, for me, it's always been about, what can I do that will make this week's, you know, this story better than the story I wrote last week? Or what can I do that will really improve my coverage? What do people want to read about? What do people want to hear about? It's definitely a balancing act of trying to be the best journalist you can be while also providing, you know, giving your outlet the best coverage as well.
Right. Yeah, that's because, you know, I started podcasting 4 years ago, and, you know, a lot of people don't want to admit it, but once you start podcasting, you pretty much you're part of the media in the probably I don't want to say in a small way, but more like in a medium way. Because, of course, you know, we're not the ESPNs, the Fox Sports, the CBSs of the world, the CNNs, the, you know, you just name all of the major outlets for media. But, you know, we build our own brand and we have our own opinions, just like a journalist. And
for sure.
For me, when I came in, you know, I just did it for fun. I started just networking with people. I just started working with people that I already knew and had a reach. But when I started getting more comfortable and I'm like, you know, I love it and it's a passion, and I reach out to people like yourself, you know, on social media, I'm like, you know, I want to keep doing this, because it's like every day you meet someone, you learn new things, you know, you learn new insights. But it's also, you know, for the goal for this podcast is to, you know, have, you know, of course, the younger generation, our generation, and even like some of the older generation to listen and to let them know that, you know, it's nothing, it's never too late to pursue your dreams. So for me, it's like, you know, I compete with myself too as well, but also at the same time, you know, I'm letting people know that, hey, you can use this as motivation as well. So
most definitely. Yeah. I think we think the same on that.
Mm-hmm. So tell us about the time you worked with the Broncos. Like, how was that? Like, what years did you work?
Sure. So this was my first job mm-hmm. out of college. So 2018. I spent the season as a digital media intern. So the 2018 season, I was only out there like 4 or 5 months.
Mm-hmm.
But that was, I still think that it's really one of my favorite times as a journalist. I was, you know, that was really beat reporting for, you know, Broncos.com. So, mm-hmm. You know, I was working at the team facility every day and then, you know, trying to provide that beat coverage, beat reporting, in a team with, you know, a decent sized team, but it was really, really cool. I got access to, I was at all the home games and mm-hmm. I traveled to about half of the away games. And I got to fly with the team, which was awesome. I mean, if I could fly charter everywhere, that would be amazing. but obviously I can't. But just seeing, that was a really important time for me professionally, because while I had done some a lot of beat reporting as a student at Northwestern, this was like my first time where, you know, I'm out in the real world. I'm living in my apartment. You know, this is me making money. For the first time, you know, my first real, you know, I'd had like summer jobs and a couple jobs while I was working, while I was at school, but this was my first time out of school having like a real job and, you know, having to, just, you know, have some more adult responsibilities. So that was a really great job. I got to, again, it's about kind of, you know, forming relationships with the people who you're interviewing on a day-to-day basis and, you know, trying to come up with really good stories that are, you know, again, they're insightful, they're entertaining, they teach you something. So, and especially working for the team, like we really wanted to focus on, you know, the players themselves and shining them in a good light. And again, like providing fans, when fans, you know, when a Broncos fan gets home from work and they want to know what's up with the Broncos, we want them going to Broncos.com first. So,
right.
Providing really good in-depth coverage that's fair, fair to the players and fair to the organization and, you know, you want to be objective when you provide coverage. So when the team was struggling, we covered their struggles. And when the team was playing well, we, you know, tried to emphasize how well they were playing. And it was a really, really cool job. I got to meet a lot of people and learn a lot And I just, you know, I came in not having covered any NFL before. I'd obviously done a lot of college sports while I was in college. Huge learning curve for me when I first got there. And I can tell you, I was so nervous those first few interviews with NFL players, you know, because at that point, they still weren't that far removed from their Super Bowl, yeah, the Super Bowl in 2015. Winner. So they still had some Super Bowl winners there. And, you know, you're talking to, you know, some true stars, you know, Von Miller was there. And yeah, so I'm not afraid to admit that I was nervous. And, you know, my first time coming in, I'm 21, 22 years old, you know, just a fresh faced new reporter there. So it was really cool. I got to learn from a lot of really great people. And you learn how to, you know, you learn how to cover the NFL, which is, it was really a great, great opportunity for me to learn how to, you know, navigate a locker room after a win or after a loss. And, you know, again, this is where I was really competing with myself in terms of trying to learn how to ask really good questions, get that really good quote that I'm going to use in a story. So that was really great. And again, like the opportunity to be in a professional locker room was something that I definitely did not take for granted.
Yeah, I'm glad that you said that, because I know y'all, you know, as beat writers, as journalists, that's like, you know, y'all in the front of everything. Y'all deal with the athletes, and I know sometimes, you know, y'all job could be very hard, because, you know, when y'all try to ask a question, which to me, majority of the time, the questions would be good, but y'all don't get the answer that y'all want. And I know, you know, it's hard for y'all, because, you know, especially after a loss, an athlete, you know, they don't want to be bothered with nobody and stuff and everything, and it could be a challenge. So, you know, I'm glad that you said that, you know, it was nerve wracking, because I can only imagine, you know, especially after a loss, or if the players had just got traded or whatnot, or they disputing with a contract, like, you know, they like all of us, you know, we all have our different situations and stuff, but at the same time, we have to do our job, you know, we have to make a living, so.
Right, yeah, and yeah, you bring up a good point, like, our job is to cover them, and their job is to play. So, like, you know, for me, it would always come down to a big thing that I tried to do is just, like, treat these athletes with respect. You know, they're on such a big stage, and, like, they get so much hate, and, you know, it's so difficult to be a professional athlete and, you know, have everybody watching your every move. So to me, it always came down to just being respectful and understanding, like, hey, if I had just had a really bad day, I probably wouldn't want to have to answer questions about it for the next 20 or 30 minutes either. But on the other hand, that's part of the job. That's what you sign up for. So for me, it was important to be respectful. And you can definitely ask challenging questions without being disrespectful. So that's definitely a fine line. And that's, again, one of the things that I worked on is, like, how do you ask a good challenging question after a loss that isn't disrespectful, that won't, you know, cause an athlete to get frustrated with you? Because what I've learned is that if you come in and do your job well and you're respectful and you're hardworking, athletes will recognize that, and they'll give you those good answers. They'll recognize, hey, this guy's here putting in the hours, putting in the work, you know, and he, you know, he's been here from the beginning and has worked hard, and he's as dedicated to his craft as I am to mine. So he understands that, yeah, it wasn't my best game, but he's also got a deadline to meet and a story to write. So it comes back to, you know, being able to walk that line of being respectful, but also being able to, you know, challenge athletes a little bit to give them a good answer. And obviously not challenge them on, like, why'd you do this? Or why are you guys losing so much? But, you know, be able to ask them a question that is respectful of them and obviously all that they've accomplished, while also, you know, recognizing that if something didn't go well on the field,
right.
You know, you can point that out.
Right. Yeah, because at the end of the day, we all need, you know, even ourselves, we need, you know, what they call that? We need some type of professional criticism. You know, we need,
right.
You know, we need to motivate each other. Especially because it is a difference between, because you said you have to respect the athletes because you understand what they go through. Same with the athletes. I understand they know that, you know, not all media people are bad and they not, you know, ready to, I guess, get the big, you know, the big storyline and stuff. They understand that y'all have a, you know, well, we have a hard time, you know, on a day-to-day basis to try to, you know, to get the information that we need and stuff. And I just think, you know, it needs to be more of an understanding on both sides because I've seen stories about athletes with certain media persons and vice versa. And at one point, I was more on the athlete side because I played sports before, not professionally, but I played it before. But when I started doing my podcasting and stuff and I'm interviewing people, I'm like, I kind of understand both sides. I just think that it needs to be more of an understanding. You know, it needs to be more, I guess, communication as far as like, you know, like let's build a relationship. Something like that. Like, hey, let's go out to Starbucks or something, or during the off season we could hang out just to get familiar, you know, with each other. I don't know, but it needs to be some type of understanding on both sides when it comes to that.
Yeah, for sure. And I would say one other thing is that like when you know, it's hard to write about teams that struggle or, you know, aren't mm-hmm. good, or, you know, because you have to deliver the news. You know, you can't sugarcoat things. You can't say, oh, it's going to be fine if the team is not going to be fine. But so that's really, for me, what's always been very important to me is that if I'm going to, you know, ask these challenging questions after a loss, I need to make sure that the, you know, the premise of the question is right. So that's a big thing for me is like when I'm observing, you know, when I'm watching a game, I'm taking a lot of notes and I'm trying to notice things. And obviously all of these NFL players will forget more than I'll ever know about NFL and about football in general. But I'm trying to be as informed as possible so that when I ask a question after a loss, it's correct. I want to say, like, you know, if I'm talking to an offensive lineman and maybe they're getting beat to the outside, more often than they're getting beat to the inside, I can notice that and come up to them and they'll be like, you're right. That was an issue for me. That was insightful. You know, they can appreciate that you were really trying to be insightful rather than asking, like, why were you so bad today? Right? More right. Being like, how did this defensive end, you know, try to set you up inside so that he would then have more success outside, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just having these observations and being able to back it up. Like, unfortunately, I think that one of the toughest things right now is that people always want to have such hot takes on people,
mm-hmm.
you know, on athletes. They always want to have, they want to yell about James Harden struggling and this, mm-hmm. that, the other thing. They want to, you know, it's not always about who has the loudest voice, but about who has the smartest voice. So for me personally, I've always tried to, you know, have either stats that back things up or observations that back things up or, you know, quotes that back things up. I try not to just make statements that don't have really good sound reasoning behind them.
Right. Yeah, because Man, it's a crazy world, especially that. And that's another question I want to ask you. Just as a journalist, I know we talk about, you know, you want to make articles, you want to make newsletters very engaging for the readers, for the subscribers. And I ask artists this all the time for the music wise, because you know, music, we have streaming and everything. Back in the day, we had CDs and cassettes and everything. As technology is getting more advanced and everyone is on their phone, do you think it's hard for you as a journalist to keep people engaged because of the easy access that they have nowadays? Like, you could, like, basically what I'm asking is because, you know, yes, everybody have their phone in their hands, but they could be on Twitter 1 minute, they could be reading your newsletter one minute, they could go back on the ESPN app and read another article another minute. Like, the attention span is ridiculous right now. Do you ever sometimes think about that? Like how to really, you know, keep your readers, you know, on a week to week, day to day basis?
Yeah. I mean, you're absolutely right. You know, kind of that landscape of how people consume things is changing. You know, it's so easy now to get, you know, like you said, go to Twitter, go to ESPN, you know, hop into a newsletter and boom, 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 read one thing right after another. I think the biggest thing for me is that it is a challenge. I think that's a challenge that people deal with all the time. The biggest thing for me is that I think that if I provide just like that high quality content, like there's so much noise, like you mentioned. Like if you go on Twitter, you can get 100 different opinions from 100 different people in 5 seconds. You know, it's always going to be there. But that's where I think, like, kind of having, you have to work hard to kind of establish that level of credibility and, like, why should I read this person rather than this person? Or why should I read a reporter's article rather than just see what people have to say on Twitter? So it's really about, for me, like, trying to establish a high level of credibility. And that's where it comes back to, like, you know, I didn't just, you know, watch this game and shoot off a couple tweets. You know, I watch this game and then I talk to, you know, I watch this game and then I talk to the players and I, you know, observe this and I was there covering it. So it's really a combination of just trying to provide readers with something that's maybe a little bit a cut above. You're always going to have the fans who just want to scroll Twitter after a game, but I still think that there's a really good space in sports media for someone who's there at the game, who's talking to the players afterwards, who's getting that really good quote or that really good observation and then putting it together in a story that, you know, ideally, an ideal fan for me is going to, sure, everyone's going to scroll Twitter and everyone's going to, you know, listen to these opinions. But then when they, you know, maybe that next morning when they wake up and they're still thinking about the game, they can go read, you know, a 5 minute long, you know, read a story that's going to take them 5 minutes, but is still going to present information in a way that makes them think and educates them and keeps them entertained. I still think that there's a space for really good longer form writing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one of the questions, you know, I always had that question in my head, because it's like, you know, I see people all the time, they'll be reading something, and then they'll just jump and go to somewhere else, and then they'll come back, like, you know, you remember when we was growing up, we had actual newspapers, we had actual newsletters, you know, whether it was physical, even like, you know, email newsletter, and nowadays with all this stuff going on, people are just sending like information, even if you're not subscribed to it. Like that's why I say technology is so crazy now, where they can just get your information and they'll just send it to you. Like, I'm like, I ain't subscribed to y'all, you know, but hey, let me check it out, you know. I have a couple more questions before we end the show.
For sure.
Working in college sports, like as far as like, you know, following, you know, college sports, and you seen how everything changed the last few years, and one of the, I guess, the big things that happened was the, you know, the NIL and everything. As a journalist, someone who worked closely, you know, in college sports and especially in college basketball, do you think it helped college, or it kind of like made it too, I guess, too NBA-ish, too NFL-ish? Like, has it ruined the game, or has it helped, or both?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely such a huge, you know, thing at the top of people's minds right now when it comes to college sports. I definitely don't think that it's ruined the game. Mm-hmm. I think that it was such a drastic change that maybe there was no way to really like adequately prepare coaches and programs for it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I think I've always thought that college athletes should have avenues to be paid. Just the you know, the money that they generate for these programs, they should find a way to be able to capitalize on that. So I'm glad that it's been passed and been implemented.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that it's a changing landscape for sure. You know, you see a lot of athletes now who are maybe staying in college mm-hmm. another year because of that NIL money, and I think that's a really good thing. There are a lot of athletes who, you know, previously would jump to the pros because that's where the money was, and maybe they weren't ready to jump to the pros. And then all of a sudden their pro career is short and they're trying to figure out what's their next, you know, step in life. And now maybe that NIL deal is keeping them in school for a year and they're graduating now. Mm-hmm. So I think, in terms of strictly sports, though, it is a challenge. Like, you know, you see the deals that people are signing, you know, the moment that they've decided to transfer a place and they've already have a deal in hand, which I think the NCAA is going to try to crack down on. I know they were talking about that this week. They're trying to crack down on boosters being as involved in the recruiting of players. But again, I think it's a big change, and I think that it will work itself out. But yeah, it has definitely changed the college landscape in terms of how people are perceiving their own worth and how they're being recruited. And I think overall it will be a net positive, and it's obviously a net positive for these players.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so I think that overall it's just going to take longer to adjust. Mm-hmm. Than people realize. You know, everybody wanted to come in and say college athletes should get paid, and I agree with that for sure.
Right.
But like anything, like a huge change like this, it's going to take time to acclimate, and you know, players are going to have to adjust, and programs are going to have to adjust, coaches are going to have to adjust. But overall, I don't think it's going to ruin the game. It's just changing the game in a way that has shocked us the last few years. But mm-hmm. I think eventually it will become, you know, a better system.
Yeah, I agree, because I was one of the few people that wanted, you know, student athletes to get paid. I was getting my master's from St. Thomas University down here in Miami, and was it my master's or was it my doctorate program? I'm trying to remember. I think it was my master's program. Anyway, so we had to have a discussion. So I forgot what class it was, but I was going against somebody. No, actually, no, we wasn't going. We was going against Eric. We was all going against each other. It was more like a, how you call it, debate style assignment. So mm-hmm. for me, I was saying that, you know, student athletes do need to get paid, because it's like me when I was at FIU, that was my undergrad. When I interned for the football team, I was a football equipment manager, like intern. And the stuff that these kids had to go through, so I'm like, this is FIU. I couldn't imagine Alabama, UM, you know, Florida, you know, Northwestern, like the bigger schools. I couldn't even imagine what they going through on a day-to-day basis. And matter of fact, Northwestern was one of the first schools I remember. I think it was back in 2011. It was 2010, 2011 when they wanted to have a union. They wanted to unionize, right, because they want the athletes to get paid. Because I'm like, we go to class. We have meetings with our coaches. We go to class. We got to go make sure we eat our first meal. We go back to class, and then we have practices. Like, it's a lot for every sport. And I was saying this, and then this girl, this young lady, I forgot her name. It was like a student. She was one of my classmates. Mm-hmm. And she played volleyball at West Virginia. And she was basically saying, well, she had a good argument. She was pretty much saying that, so what about us that, you know, volleyball players, you know, that means we're going to have to get paid too. And I was basically telling her, I said, y'all will get paid, but you got to understand, the main three sports, you know, in particular, that get paid the most is football, basketball, and baseball, you know, and in some areas, like in the Midwest, it's hockey. But those three main sports bring in the money to the university and stuff. So when I was interning, I was learning. I'm like, so you know, for FIU, football was the money maker. So they made their money, and then they was paying for everything else, you know, in the athletic department. And I was telling her, like, you know, you may disagree with me, but these kids will need to get paid. And I even told her at the time, I said, watch, when volleyball players, they would get paid too. I guess at the time, people didn't, I guess they didn't know the structure of, you know, students getting paid. So now I'm reading stories about, like, how golf players, college golf players, they getting NIL deals and stuff. And I'm like, this is what I've been trying to tell people, you know, for these last few years, is that all the kids are going to, you know, they're going to get the money that they deserve. But of course, one, you still have to be a good player. And two, you know, like, it's like real life. It's like, you know, going and applying for a job or something. Like, it's going to be some type of competition. But I like how, like, schools like UM and Texas, I don't know why people getting mad about it, but Oklahoma, I think they offering what kids like $50,000 or something like that. Plus they scholarships and stuff. Like, I think it's every year, right, or something like that. I read the article, but I'm like, people gotta understand that's for these kids, man. Like, these kids, like, you don't know what they go through. Even as a regular college student, it's a lot. You know this. Like, it's a lot. Like, we go to class, we got internships. Cause you know, that was an issue when I was going to school. They didn't have paid internships. Now they do, cause they understand, like, hey, these kids go to school, they got a regular job, they have a business, and they do internships and stuff like that. So it's just like, they need to get paid, you know, pay the study programs or whatever. But it's I'm with it 100%. I just think the only thing that kind of bothers me was I should have asked you this question too, is the transfer portal, because that's the wild wild west. Like like, right, it's like free agency out here, you know. But you know, like you said, it's still something new to us, so we'll just have to, like, you know, you got to see the next 5 to 10 years and see how everything is going to, you know, be, you know, structured and stuff.
Right. Right. Yeah.
So, the last question is, where do you see yourself 5 to 10 years from now?
Good question. So I love beat reporting. I know we talked a little bit about the Broncos.
Mm-hmm.
I just love being able to bring those types of stories to people. And I love meeting athletes and meeting people and, you know, finding really good, interesting stories. So, I would love to be in beat reporting again. That's something where I think that, you know, I grew up luckily, like, being from Virginia, like I grew up with really, really great writers from the Washington Post. Like, you know, that's the best of the best.
Mm-hmm.
And so I learned a lot from them and I still try to read as much as I can. But yeah, I would love to be a beat reporter for, you know, an NFL team or, you know, I really love the NFL and I love the NBA and I love college basketball. And I would love to get back to beat reporting. Maybe let's go with NFL for now. Let's go with 5 to 10 years from now. I'm an NFL beat reporter.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully bringing the world stories that inform them and, you know, entertain them and just make them smarter fans in general.
Man, that's what's up, man. And, you know, once again, you know, thank you for coming on the show. You know, you're an alumni now, so, you know, don't forget about your boy. You know, if you need a place to, you know, come on to and talk about different things, you know, you could always come on my show.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
And I know it's a lot of time and stuff and effort and other things you have, you know, going on. But, you know, once again, I appreciate you just coming on the show, man. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. It was fun.
Yeah, man, it was fun, man. You got to have a part two. But
that's right.
This been your boy, DJ Anonymous with another episode of Sports Biz Music, the podcast with my boy Zach Peerless, right?
That's right.
And we out. Peace.